dose of numerical work, as indeed there's a lot of numerical work, in relation to causal sets. This, however, is not directly related to causal sets, only indirectly in the sense that it has to do with the way matter might come out indirectly of causal sets. But basically, I'm doing continuum quantum gravity here. And the work is done mainly with these people. And if you're interested in the, since I said it is a problem that I think is worth working on, if you're interested in the details of the mathematics involved, then I would refer you mainly to this last paper where everything is given in great detail that's available on my website here, which is this particular last reference. Oh, it is on the archive. But I always give mine because sometimes I correct things in mine and I'm too lazy to change it on the archive. Someday I'll get around to it. Okay. So I talked about projective statistics. So the first question is, what do we mean by projective statistics? Statistics, as everyone is familiar with, is governed by representations of the permutation group of identical objects, identical particles in this case. And so when I talk about projective statistics, which I think arguably has not ever been seen in physics so far, certainly not in nature has ever been seen so far, I'm talking about projective representations of the permutation group. And more specifically here, PUI are projective, unitary, irreducible representation of the permutation group. So what is a projective representation? It's something that is familiar to most people in connection with particles of half integer or objects of half integer spin. It means that in this case, it's the rotation group and not the permutation group. It means that the elements of the group are represented by operators that don't compose exactly the way the group does, but have an extra phase that cannot be eliminated. The way you can see that you can't eliminate the phase in the case of the spin a half object is just that e to the 2 pi I j z is minus 1, whereas the 2 pi rotation is plus 1 in the group. You might ask, well, can I eliminate this phase by changing the choice of phase? Here's a little proof that you can't. Suppose you were to try to convert the rotation about the x-axis, e to the I theta jx, into that times a phase, e to the I psi. At the level of the Lie algebra, that's the same thing as replacing j sub x by j sub x plus psi, where psi is a real number, arbitrary real number. But when you do that, if you take the commutator of jx and jy, obviously these multiples of the identity drop out and you're left with the same jz. In other words, you can't really get rid of the fact that e to the 2 pi I jz is minus 1. More precisely, the way to say that is what you can't eliminate is the fact that the exponential of 2 pi times the commutator of jx and jy is minus 1. And so spin half representation cannot be an ordinary representation. It has to be projective. You can also see this in a nice topological way by considering loops of loops in the space of configurations as the object. But I think there's no time to go into that. So I'm talking, however, going to be talking not about the rotation group, of course, but the permutation group. Here, it's less familiar, I think, that it has projective representations. In fact, it's not at all well known. A comparison to make here, so before saying that, let me, as a point of comparison, introduce parastatistics, which are also non-traditional representations of the permutation group of n identical objects. So in the case of n equals 3, you have three possible irreducible unitary representations. One of them is represented by this young tableau, gives Fermi statistics. One represented by this gives Bose statistics. I think a line is not showing up. It's just glare here. And the third one, which is less well known, which is a non-abelian, that is, it's a higher dimensional representation, not a pure phase, is called parastatistics. However, all of these are unitary ordinary representations. However, when you get to 4, there's no extra phase in there. The matrices multiply just as the matrices of the group. However, when you get to 4 identical objects, something new happens, that you can have properly projective representations of the permutation group. And there's a sign, just as we had before, the sort of signature of it, that e to the 2 pi I jx jy is equal to minus 1. Here there's a signature which is called the sure sign, or the sure sign. It's definitely, because Isaac Schur analyzed these, as in Schur's lemma, analyzed these representations. This is, means it's an undeniable, you know, you can't, incontrovertible. If you see this sign, this sure sign, then you're sure that it's a projective representation. There are some other sure signs that are not sure in that sense. So, and what it is, it's that if you imagine, these are permutations of four objects, and you can see here why you need four. If you imagine exchanging two objects and then over here exchanging two others, obviously it doesn't matter in which order you do it, do those two operations. But in the projective representation, it does. The two operators anti-commute rather than commuting. That's the simple test if you're trying to produce a projective representation. It's obvious that changing the phases can't matter because the same pair of operators occur on both sides. And we'll see an explicit example of this later. That's what we're looking for, where these are exchanges of topological geons, which I'll describe now. So far, this is just abstract. Now let's go to gravity. In the case of a continuum space-time, or sufficiently well approximated by a continuum, let's limit ourselves to the special case where there's no topology change, so that this four-dimensional space-time is a Cartesian product of just time with some three manifold, which we could call space. Now, it's every three manifold has what's called a prime decomposition. Assuming it's not just R3, just topologically trivial, it can be written as what's called a connected sum of a finite number, if the non-triviality, if it's asymptotically flat, can be written as a so-called connected sum of a finite number of irreducible topological objects, which are called prime manifolds, in which in the quantum gravity setting are particle-like objects called geons. So let me give you two examples of this. First one is this so-called quaternionic space, which you make. It turns out you can visualize these very easily. You take R3 and you cut out something, and then you make identifications to sew up the boundaries. So in this case, I've cut out a cube. I've identified the opposite faces, but with a twist, either right or left-handed twists, giving the object a chirality. There's a lot I could say about this, but the interesting thing is that space-time based on this manifold admits half-integer spin, even though, of course, the underlying gravity is just a bosonic theory. So this is an early example of what you might call emergent spin. However, the examples I'm mostly interested in here are simpler, these RP3 geons, in which instead of cutting out a cube, you just cut out a ball, and again, you identify antipodal points. So you can get, there's a void here, and then you fill up the void by, remove the void by identifying opposite points. That's the connected sum of, that should say R3 here, R3 with RP, four cup with RP3. If we do that four times, if we cut out four copies and make the identifications, then we have this space-time, or the space here, and that space-time with four RP3 geons in it. And that's the space-time we'll be dealing with for the rest of the talk. And the conjecture, which was supposed to be a theorem, is now a conjecture, is that this space-time supports projective statistics. In other words, we can make the quantum theory such that these behave as.
So how can you go from one to four?
I just cut out four instead of one.
Four different
places, yeah. I need four in order to get the projective statistics. That's the minimal number. So the relevant group here is called the mapping class group, and it represents basically two kinds of processes in which the geons are exchanged with each other. That's what's involved in, of course, the definition of statistics, but a new kind of process in which one gion slides through the other. Let me run through some abstract stuff here and then go back to the picture. So in quantum gravity, the space-time, effective configuration space, if you don't have topology change, is the space of three metrics divided by the diffeomorphisms that vanish at infinity. You can go through some mathematics here, and you can see that group, which is that the pi one, that is a set of non-contractible loops in that space of configurations, is a group which is the ratio of the diff infinity to diff zero, which means the set of large diffeomorphisms, ones that cannot be continuously deformed to the identity. And it turns out that all these large diffeomorphisms come from these physical processes of exchange or slide. So to explain what is a slide, let me make a slightly simpler analogy based on smoke rings, or you might call them a condensed matter kind of system like closed vortex lines, which has similar properties, although the RP3 AGNs are in some sense simpler, that we have a slide of, we have an exchange, which is an obvious thing. You just make them change places. A slide is more complicated. You take one and you pass it through the other and then bring it back to where it was. So it turns out that the slides form a normal subgroup, and so for this big group G, this mapping class group, is just the semi-direct product of the slides with the permutation group on four elements, the things generated by the exchanges. And in fact, the slides themselves are generated by 12 slides because we have four different gions, and you can choose any one and slide it through any other one. Now, what are the consequences of this for quantum gravity? As I said, this G, this symmetry group, if you like that word, is called the mapping class group of the manifold. Each universal, unitary, irreducible representation of this mapping class group corresponds to a different sector of the quantum theory. Again, a familiar example is consider just point particles. In that case, you can just exchange them. So G consists just of the permutation. Each different irreducible representation is a different statistics of which these three are examples in the case of three-point particles. But for extended topological objects, including gions, the slides make life much more interesting. So we have to talk about unitary irreducible representations of semi-direct product groups, because remember, in this case, we have the semi-direct product of the slides with the permutations. So again, let me just remind you of an example that may be more familiar, which is the Poincaré group. In that case, we have the translations, semi-direct product with the Lorentz transformations. We build a projective unitary irreducible representation of the Poincaré group by making two choices. First, we choose a representation of the translation group, that is, we choose a momentum, and second, a form momentum, and second of all, we choose a representation of the so-called little group that's left over, which is like going to a particular frame in which the particle is dressed. The little group is SO3. I'll never make it. So, this is very similar, but there's one big difference, which is that the little group is going to be the whole of the analog of the Lorentz group, that the whole permutation group. And the other thing is that the overall representation of the group needs to be ordinary, unitary, but the little group will still be projective, and that'll give us projective statistics. So let me very briefly review how to build a unitary representation of the semi-direct product of two groups in this special case. This is called Mackey theory in the general case. You start with unitary irreducible representation of the slides. Again, there are two free choices. That's the first choice. Assume, neglect this for now. And it'll be true in the example we'll look at. And then the second thing is you determine the unique projective unitary representation of the permutations via what you might call intertwining operators that implement the exchange of labels in the first representation of the slides. And then the second choice that you make is a compatible projective unitary irreducible representation T of the permutation group. So these are two choices, but they're not exactly free. You have this compatibility condition, which tells you that if these intertwining operators that implement the slides in the first representation space make a projective representation, then the second one, T, must also be projective with the same group Schur multiplier. So the important point here is that the choice of this second representation in a second vector space of the permutation group is the choice of particle statistics. If that representation is projective, properly projective, then you get projective statistics. So I'm going farther ahead than I thought. So I might, because so now I want to give you a, this is actually the last slide. So I want to give you an example of how that works or could have worked if not for one small sign that came out wrong in the end. And then, so I'm setting a problem to do something like this that really does work. So let's go back to this. I need to find, I had to make, the first choice was a unitary irreducible representation of the slide subgroup, the things, the subgroup of all the operations that moves one GN through the other GN, like this one here. And I need to choose it in such a way that the corresponding, what are the intertwining operators, make a projective representation. So here's the proposal. So first, we'll make it just starting from some Dirac gamma matrices, but Euclidean form. And I'll just choose, here's the first free choice. I'll choose to let this slide of G on J through G on K be represented by I times gamma I gamma K. The permutations of the particles of the gons act on this just by permuting the labels, and the following exchange operators implement this and are the valid and can serve as intertwining operators. They are intertwining. So this is the important formula. The exchange of 1 and 2 can be represented by this combination, somewhat peculiar looking combination of gamma 1 plus gamma 2 times gamma 3 gamma 4. You can check that this works. If you conjugate gamma 1 with the exchange, you get gamma 2. Now, what about the Schur sign in this case? Does E1, exchange 1, 2 commute or anti-commute with E3, 4? Well, it's a little bit a three-line calculation, but you have to work it out. You get a minus sign. So this is projective statistics. It would be, except some little thing that went wrong. I didn't tell you about the relations. You know, you can define a group by generators and relations. I didn't tell you about the relations among the slides, but there are three relations that you have to satisfy. The first one is that if you, this is another obvious one, if you slide 1 through 2 and over here you slide 3 through 4, it doesn't matter in which order you do it. So this is my sign for commuting. So this and this should commute. Similarly, the slide of 1 through 2 commutes with a process in which you slide both 1 and 2 through 3. Think about it and you'll convince yourself that it's true. And then the third one is that the slide of 1 through 3 also commutes with the slide of 2 through 3. It doesn't matter in which order you do them. Again, think about it. This works, but if you plug in this definition, this choice of exchange of slide representatives, you get anti-commutation in the third case, not commutation. So that one sign is spoiling things. So I'll finish with the open problem. Can we find a different representation of the slides here, which have the right commutation relations, the right relations, and which are permuted in the same way as these here are by the exchange operators that I've written down here. Basically, if you make anything in terms of the gammas where you use their indices in an obvious way, this will work. This will give projective statistics. The question is to get the slides right. So that's the problem I'm recommending to people to work on. It's like an entirely well-posed problem of finding a certain set of matrices with certain commutation relations. If you do, it'll be, I think, the first example of projective statistics. So. Well, that's a good question. Why do we care about any statistics? So why do we care about Fermi statistics versus Bose statistics? Or why do we care about non-abelian anions or something like that? So At this point, I would have to say that it's just some, I've been fascinated by statistics at various points, and so if there's an entirely new class of statistics, it seems to be interesting. But if you ask, can we build a quantum computer with it, or is it, you know, is it important in the early universe, I have absolutely no answer at this stage.
I would thank Rafael again.